There have been 5 mass extinction events in the history of the Earth, the most famous being the one that wiped out the dinosaurs. But the Permian mass extinction was even more deadly. 96% of the life on Earth died. Peter Brannon looks back on that history in his new book, The Ends of the World: Volcanic Apocalypses, Lethal Oceans, and Our Quest to Understand Earth's Past Mass Extinctions. Brannon is a science journalist who's looking back in order to look forward at the danger the Earth may be in today. Peter Brannon, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So it seems like when you look at all of these mass extinctions in the history of the Earth, that they all involve some kind of climate change that has to do with carbon emissions in the atmosphere.
Well, yeah, I think there's been, at least in the popular imagination, there's this understanding that mass extinctions are what happens when asteroids hit the planet. And I think there's been this really cool story over the past few decades from the paleontology and geology community where they've looked for evidence of asteroid impacts at all the mass extinction levels. And except for the one that we know about when the dinosaurs go extinct, all the mass extinctions seem to have a lot to do with these giant ocean and climate changes that are driven by carbon dioxide. So, you know, in the first mass extinction a long time ago, it seems like there was an ice age from falling CO2. And then in some of the other mass extinctions, it seems like there's extreme global warming and ocean acidification and some of the same stuff we see going on today, driven by carbon dioxide.
And in the past, that carbon dioxide is coming not from cars and factories, but from volcanoes.
Right. So as one paleontologist put it to me, it doesn't matter whether carbon dioxide comes from Volvos or volcanoes. The atmosphere and the ocean responds the same way. But yeah, these are really extreme volcanic events. They're called continental flood basalts. But what happens is basically the Earth kind of opens up in some part of the world, and you just have these floods of lava for thousands of years. But the lava isn't what's killing most of life on Earth because it only covers a certain area. But you see stuff going extinct all over the planet. And it's actually thought that the gases that come up with these volcanoes, most notably CO2, is what's driving the mass extinction. So that's something we is kind of alarming,
I guess. When we talk about a mass extinction, does that mean everything on Earth dies?
The mass extinctions are really 5 times where over 75% of complex life goes extinct in what geologically is a really quick period of time. So tens of thousands of years at the most, and maybe much quicker than that.
One of the things you point out in this book is that a warning sign for a mass extinction involves the coral reefs being in trouble in the oceans. Tell us about that. When has that happened in the past? Because it is something that is starting to happen now.
Right, yeah. So that's definitely one of the more alarming things is that there have really only been these things called reef collapses a few times in the entire history of animal life. And, you know, oftentimes they're associated with these mass extinctions. So there's this time, the end Triassic mass extinction, where 75% of life went extinct. And coral reefs had this amazing sort of blossoming in the end of the Triassic. And then, you know, they make up a lot of the Austrian Alps. If you hike up those mountains, you can kind of see that they're just made of coral reefs.
Really?
Yeah. And at the end of the Triassic, coral reefs basically disappear completely for millions of years. Too much CO2, when it reacts with seawater, it makes the water more acidic, it makes it warmer, and it makes it really difficult for things like coral reefs to stick around. And so when we plot out what humans are doing for the next few decades, coral reefs are really going to have a hard time sticking around in the second half of this century. And given that that's only happened a few times in Earth's history, that's really pretty amazing that humans have that influence.
And we're already seeing that in places like the Great Barrier Reef right now as ocean temperatures rise just a little bit.
Right. So the Great Barrier Reef has had this really dramatic die-off in only the past year, actually. There was a really bad episode of it. And that's from warming. So modern coral reefs also don't like when it gets warm. But then when you make the water more acidic, too, that's just another stress. And so when we look at what that's going to look like by 2050, unless we get our emissions under control, this is really just a glimpse of the future, unfortunately.
When we look back at the past mass extinctions, do they happen quickly or do they take hundreds, thousands, millions of years to take place?
Yeah, so I think this is kind of an urgent question to address because it's hard to sort of see with high resolution in the fossil record things that happened hundreds of millions of years ago. So maybe these are good analogs for the near future, or maybe these things really do take thousands of years. I think that's something we're trying to figure out. You know, some people would tell you that the dinosaurs were wiped out in 15 minutes in a really bad day. And other people would say that it was sort of this more prolonged thing where ecosystems were stressed by a lot of things. And then the asteroid and these crazy volcanoes in India, it might have been a more prolonged episode that lasted thousands of years. So I think we need to get a better handle of how quickly these things can happen.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Peter Brannan, whose book is called The Ends of the World, Volcanic Apocalypses, Lethal Oceans, and Our Quest to Understand Earth's Past Mass Extinctions. Peter Brannan, in order to do the research for this book, you went all over the country to places that many people don't realize are historical artifacts of what happened in some of these mass extinctions.
Right. So, I mean, for example, one place I went was Cincinnati, which apparently is one of the most fossil-rich regions in the entire world. Just if you pull over on the side of the highway, there's this sort of gray-layered rock that if you go up to it, it's filled with just sea life. Seashells are falling out of the side of the highway in Cincinnati. And this is from 445 million years ago when North America was sort of rotated on its side and south of the equator for the most part, and there was no life on land, and there are all these weird sort of horseshoe crab-looking things in the ocean. So it's this totally different world that exists just on the side of the highway. Another place is the Palisades in New York, which are these giant cliffs made out of basalt that I'd seen a million times visiting New York, but I had no idea that they were part of this sort of magma from one of the worst mass extinctions ever. And you can find the same rock in Nova Scotia and Brazil and Spain. And it's one of these sort of crazy, almost global volcanic events that almost ended life on Earth. So yeah, I mean, there are these mundane places. You've seen them a million times. But the story of geology is really that we're standing on this, you know, underneath our feet are these totally different worlds that once you see through the sort of lens of geology, it kind of changes your perspective on everything.
Well, and now today we think of the Appalachian Mountains as the smaller mountain range
right.
in the United States. But you write that back in the day, they would have been as tall as the Alps.
Oh, yeah. They would have been these towering snow-covered peaks that would have stretched from, I don't know, Greenland to Alabama. So they are this epic mountain chain, and they just have the misfortune of having been around for a long time. So they've been eroded away. But yeah, they're not just the sort of hills we see, but the months were much more grand than that.
All right, so now let's get back to the catastrophe at hand,
sure.
which is how close are we now to something like what has happened in the past? We know that we are producing a lot of carbon into the atmosphere.
Yeah, so far the damage humans have caused in the environment hasn't actually been through climate change or ocean acidification I was talking about before, but it's actually been through direct interaction with the environment, hunting, fishing, habitat destruction, deforestation, that sort of thing.
Basically, any time that humans in history have shown up in a place, a lot of other species end up dying pretty quickly.
Right, yeah. So if you plot whenever, certainly in the Pacific Islands in the last few hundred years, all these local bird species and things go extinct when humans show up. And in Australia and in North America, it seems like there's this pretty solid coincidence in time between when humans first show up, when all these giant sort of ice age animals go extinct. And then up to the present day, when we're really sort of now with industrial fishing trawlers and things like that, we're sort of accelerating our influence on the environment. But the good news is that there's a lot of biodiversity still to save. Certainly, we've had an incredibly destructive influence on the environment. But I think typical estimates for how many species we've driven extinct is documented less than 1%. Maybe it's a few percent at the most. And these mass extinctions we're talking about, upwards of 75%, sometimes 90% of species go extinct. So we're not there yet, which is the good news, but we really only have a few decades to sort of right the ship because we see that populations in animals are declining all over the world and range sizes are sort of contracting. And that's sort of the first indicator that a species might be about to go extinct is big population decline. So if you project that forward a few centuries, then we might actually be in the same conversation is these crazy events that really only happen once every 100 million years or so.
And what about on the issue of carbon emissions? How close are we to trouble there?
So we know that sometimes you hear a sort of climate denier people say, oh, it's been warm in Earth's past and life was happy, which is true. But the problem is for life that when you change things really quickly, sometimes it can't respond in time. And certainly when you have society with buildings and highways, if life needs to migrate, if it gets really warm, we might be blocking those migration routes. And so maybe we're making it much more difficult for animals and plants to adapt if climate does change really dramatically.
I have to say, after reading this book, that I wonder if there's much that we can do or if these things are just so much bigger than what humans can do to fix the problems.
Yeah, so certainly we need to transform our energy system in the next decade or two. There's an incredible challenge that there's reason to be skeptical whether humans can do that. But there's other steps we can take. We know that if you just let life sort of have a chance to bounce back. It's incredibly resilient. So a couple decades ago, you weren't supposed to eat swordfish because we almost fished it to extinction. And now we let swordfish rebound and their stocks are healthy again. And there is a movement towards setting aside more of nature for protected areas. George W. Bush notably set aside the biggest marine protected area at the time. So it shouldn't be a political issue. It hasn't always been a political issue. And I think it's a shame that environmentalism and stewardship of the planet has become one, and hopefully we can move away from that.
Can we avoid another mass extinction?
I think we can. Unless we just stick our head in the sand and do things exactly the same way we've been doing it for the last 50 to 100 years, I think we can. In my better moods, I'm hopeful about humanity's ability to learn and adapt to the changing world around them.
That's Peter Brannon, whose book is called The Ends of the World, Volcanic Apocalypses, Lethal Oceans, and Our Quest to Understand Earth's Past Mass Extinctions. Peter, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. This was fun.